Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like The Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, The Renegade Rules Podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Welcome to the Childcare Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio with Lisa Murphy. How you doing, Lisa Murphy?
I am good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm delightful. It's a beautiful day. Let's talk about death.
Okay. What specifically about death would you like to unpack today?
Well, I had this one kind of on the back burner of pod episodes. You know, I've got my stack of index card ideas, and it got pushed to the top the other day because one of our listeners reached out, and long story short, she had heard a child previously in her care, so child's a couple years out of child care, had a three-year-long bout with cancer that the young person lost. Mm-hmm. And this caregiver was grieving, of course, because, you know, this family child care provider especially, so my understanding is that the child was in her care for a long stretch of time. And so that's a real hard thing to deal with, something I've never dealt with personally, but, you know, over 30 years, I've talked to a number of caregivers who've gone through this, and I can't imagine how hard that is for people. I mean, for me, when a child moved on, started school or moved to another community or something, after having them for a number of years in our program, that sense of loss would rip me apart for long stretches of time. I mean, I remember what's her name? My Annie. We had her from the time she was 8 weeks old to the time she was starting kindergarten, and 40 plus hours a week, and then she left me. It's like losing one of your own children, and so to lose them to just life is one thing, but to lose them to death is another bit of mourning, huh?
Well, also, I love the permanency, obviously. I don't want to minimize this, but, you know, when Annie went to kindergarten, you knew that she could come back to visit, right?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Circle back and touch back, and you could still kind of keep that relationship real time in person moving ahead. But when I mean, that death is a final goodbye, literally, right? And so knowing that you don't even have the opportunity to do that, just adds a whole other layer to it. I mean, like you, I've not had a kid in my program or even extended, like anywhere where I worked, you know, I didn't ever have that experience of a child dying. I've had people in the audiences who have, you know, who share stories and what they end up doing to memorialize or to remember and to grieve together. I wasn't quite sure when you said, let's talk about death, like, okay.
Well, I mean,
I'm always going to say, yes, let's talk about it. But I'm, you know, you never know really where it's going to go. I mean, I haven't even experienced, and I consider myself very fortunate. I've only lost like my grandparents. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people, and I'm the oldest of the kids, you know, my parents are still alive. Where I went to school though, with kids who were the youngest of their sibling group. So, you know, they were losing, like older siblings would get old and die. And, you know, I haven't had a lot of experience with death.
Yeah, it's all going to hit you at one time. I mean, I shouldn't laugh at that, but I mean, that's what happens. I mean, it's been going on 20 years now since my dad died. And I mean, that was tough. I mean, I guess my way of dealing with it was I built his casket and I filled in the hole. I mean, everybody else went off to have church lady ham sandwiches or whatever, and the dudes just left me. You know, the cemetery dudes were kind of cool with it. Kind of like, hey, save us a couple minutes of work. I mean, they use a backhoe. I used a spade. And you know, it was 40 minutes of hard, sweaty work, and that was really a big part of the mourning process for me. And that kind of closure kind of thing, but it's not, I mean, everybody deals with things differently. You can't.
I think it would be silly to not comment on the difference between, you know, losing an adult versus losing a child.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
I can't even wrap my brain around it. And that's what was my only hesitancy with saying, sure, let's talk about this, is that, you know, I often will feel a little discomfort when the topic is something that I got nothing, you know. I mean, I remember screaming when my grandpa died and just being a mess for a long time, and taking comfort in the memories. I mean, it sounds so cheeseball, but it's so true, you know. There and Kubler-Ross's stages of grief and mourning are very much like spot on accurate. You know, you do go through a very predictable cycle. And I think it's a mourning cycle, not just with death, but I think with the loss of absolutely anything. You know, I think it would be safe that you would go through that, like even with losing your job, you know, or in a divorce. You know, there's those stages.
Yeah, well,
which I probably should have looked up before bringing up her name, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
I think in early learning settings, it's something that often it gets put on that death, gets put on that taboo list, things we don't talk about, things we don't play, because it is uncomfortable for adults to talk about. You can listen to this. You can tell that we're a little bit uncomfortable talking about it, but we always tried to create an environment where, you know, death is part of life. A goldfish dies and you have the little goldfish funeral, and I mean, you talk about it and you experience it and you have your emotions. And, you know, having that stuff out in the open is, I think, a big piece of it. And I mean, I've worked with people who've had children die in their care. Well, actually in their care. And that's got to be,
wow.
I can't think of anything more tragic for an early learning professional to experience. And I don't know, how do you move on from that? I guess you move on the way you move on from everything. It's just one second at a time, and then one minute at a time, and then one day at a time, and then over that course of time, you have all the feels, and you process it, and the person doesn't fade from your life, but it's not, I guess, it's just not right there up in your the conscious part of your mind all the time, huh?
It moves back to your heart instead of always, I think, being in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I think with kids too, I'm even trying to think of back in imagining and remembering a time where there was like a death play in the classroom, like not even the literal death, but just the acting out of death, or maybe somebody's grandpa died and now we're seeing it in the dramatic play area. I think when adults feel that they have to guide the when they have to bring it up, I think we get really clumsy. I think if we follow where the kids are going with the conversation and not try and move it to somewhere where we are more comfortable, I think those are going to be more authentic conversations about it. And that comes back to kind of that willingness to sit in the quiet and be okay with not saying anything, and knowing that the kids will end up saying something, and then that'll kind of tell you where to go, as opposed to just assuming that you know what little kids want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I guess my solution for everything is step back and let it happen mm-hmm. when it comes to those play topics. I mean, one that sticks out vividly for me, and mostly because it's part of a presentation, is years ago our little Lily and Emma were playing, and they're moving. I'm at the dining room table working on something, and they're just being them, their wild selves. And the play space is just a huge space with lots of loose parts, and it's okay to move stuff around. And they're rearranging and setting up, and there's a lot of action. And then they're both at my side, and I've told the story before, and I won't go into whole presentation mode, but they're like, "Jeff, Mama Frog died. Want to come and pay some respects?" I'm like, sure. And they lead me into the playroom, and they've set up a funeral. They've moved this low two-drawer dresser over to the middle of the room from the wall. We kept the dress-up clothes in it, and that's draped with a little blankety thing. And there's a cardboard box there representing the casket. And there's a little plastic, a little glass bowl of a little plastic alligator clamps, white, the bright fluorescent ones that are apparently flowers, because I'm supposed to take one and put it on the coffin that's draped in a crocheted thing. And they hand me an imaginary program with that they tell me has sad songs that we're going to sing and sad stories about Mama Frog. And we go through this whole funeral where everybody gets up and talks, and they've got chairs set up with all the stuffed animals and Barbies and everything. And Barbie, of course, came to the funeral naked.
Of course.
And we go through the whole thing, and then we push reset and have to do the whole thing over again. Have the whole service. And during this whole time, Emma is handing Lily imaginary tissues, and she's got her arm around her and is consoling her and everything. And this whole process for me, I wanted to, one, laugh because it was so sweetly cute, but also bawl because I knew the story behind the play. Because a few weeks before this, a young, early 30s friend of Lily's dad had died in an industrial accident. And it was the first time young Lily had probably seen her daddy cry, and probably one of the first funerals she'd been to that stuck in her memory, if she'd been to any before. And there were flowers, and there were tears, and there were sad songs and sad stories. And so she was replicating all of that in the playroom as part of her process of making sense of it and mourning. And I mean, so I guess when that kind of play breaks out, it's vital for kids to kind of get to experience it, huh?
Well, 100%, 100%. And I had like 19 thoughts while you were telling that story, which is
a long story.
No, I wasn't meaning it like that. But just the comfort level of the adult to let the play continue and not to turn this into yet another COVID conversation, but the same idea of letting the play roll itself out, letting the play have its own organic beginning, middle, and an end, not stopping it, not redirecting it just because it's potentially making us uncomfortable, or if we think the topic is too big for kids, or if it's too scary, or, you know, but that's usually an adult, right? I don't want my emotional base to get triggered based on this, so I'm going to make this stop. But the play needs to happen. And that's so therapeutic. The other reminder of what comes in is going to come out. I mean, I hadn't heard that story in a while, but to think that there wasn't a real life experience that was then guiding that play, you know, you don't want to ever leap to conclusions and overanalyze what you're seeing, witness and unfolding in the play. But typically there's going to be a reason why with such a specific scenario. I'm trusting that you probably knew that the death had happened, right?
Yeah.
You already
yeah.
know that. Okay. So it made perfect sense for you that this is how the child is making sense of it. The early on in COVID, they were sending pictures of kids making coffins out of the blocks, and, you know, oh my God, you know, do I let this happen? Do I let this play out? Yes, you do. You do.
Yeah. Yeah. You do. And
it's therapy.
Yeah. In Lily's case, I knew the backstory of the play. I mean, all of this stuff tends to all play tends to jump out of some basis in reality, something that they've experienced or felt or thought. And so there's usually some nugget there that it erupts from.
Of course, yeah.
I like to think that if I hadn't known that, I would have interacted and engaged and supported it the same way. Because most of the time we don't know where that play is coming from. And so being able to allow yourself not to maybe understand it, but to accept it is part of the process, especially for the play experiences that we are maybe most uncomfortable with, because those are the hardest for us to say, yeah, this is okay. Let it unfold. I mean, this, she had a time to process this. And I hearken back to hearken back to, when I was, I must've been about her age, 4, going on 5, maybe a little over 5. And my grandpa died. And I mean, he'd been sick. He'd had a heart attack and he'd been in the hospital. And of course, back in the early 70s, I didn't get to go see him. But my parents were up there a lot. I was with babysitters and everything. And they came home one night from the hospital, and the report I got that grandpa wasn't hurting anymore. And so I thought, oh, great. Sunday after church, we'll go over to their house for dinner again and I'll see grandpa. And of course, that was a euphemism for grandpa croaked, grandpa's dead. And so instead of going to grandpa's house and seeing grandpa, in a couple of days, I was at a funeral, which freaked the fuck out of me.
Sure it did.
Still pissed off at the adults for not being straight up about it.
Well, I should get over that, huh? No.
45 years later, maybe I should get over it.
Well, I think it brings up yet another one of our nuggets that we kind of, our core nuggets of verbiage and language and being honest and being the communication piece is telling, using the real words for things. I have a friend who their dog went to camp, quote unquote, the dog went to camp, and the dog never came back from camp. You know, and then 3 years later, they're asking the kids, you know, you're getting older. Do you want to go to camp? And the kid's like, fuck no, I don't want to go to camp. You don't come back from camp, you know? And we forget that kids are making these associations. You know, we tell them not to use scissors because they're going to cut their finger and it's going to hurt. And then we say, come on, let's go get your hair cut. You're like, of course the kid's going to freak out, you know? So using the proper language, they did die. And it's okay to say that they died.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. There's other ways of saying it, but to remember developmentally where these children are, right? Yeah. Exactly like where you were. You received what they told you, which of course was said to you with nothing but loving good intention.
Oh, sure.
Right? But you heard it like a kid in pre-operational thought, which is, oh, sweet. It's very literal. He's not in pain. I'll see him on Sunday.
Yeah.
And in a box.
Yeah, in a box that I didn't get to build because I was only 5. And so I think this is along those lines. This is why I think it's really important for young children to interact with, to some extent, with dead stuff. I mean, I'm a big fan of when there's a dead bird or whatever it is,
a dead squirrel.
You need to poke it with a stick. And have some conversation about what dead is. Now, that conversation is a little bit different with 2 and 3 year olds than it is with 20 year olds, but they get the idea. I mean, a dead squirrel is very much different than a live squirrel. The fact that it is flat laying next to the curb and not up in a tree is a real big indicator. But it's like everything else. They learn about these things in bits and pieces.
And preferably in real context, right?
Yeah, that
not, you know, it's D week, so we're talking about death because, where did it come from, right?
Yeah.
I want to circle back to something though, Jeff. It's
the
relationship piece once again, where you had said that you like to think that even if you had not known about Lily and Emma's backstory, so to speak, with that play, that you would have still been willing to make room for it. I forgive me for always bringing it back, but it's so true. Knowing that you knew that, right? It's a nice reminder of just how incredibly important it is for us to be ongoing nurturing the relationships with our families so that they do feel comfortable letting us know the stuff that's not just the happy, pretty Pinterest stuff, but also, you know, the muck and the mire and the crap that we're still going to see evidence of. right? You're still going to, whether it's death play, whether it's yelling and screaming because mom and dad had another fight, you know, whether it's gunplay because we witnessed another shooting in the neighborhood, whatever that is, knowing that our parents have that sense of trust, that they might be embarrassed as all shit to let us know about it. Hey, I got to let you know, we were up really late, we were screaming, and, you know, I really don't want to process it with you right now, but it, just in case it comes up, you know, buh. And look at the courage to bring that up and not just the pretty stuff. Yeah. And I just wanted to, I don't know.
Along those lines, I guess for caregivers dealing with this, whether it's what we started off with this episode, a death of a child you used to care for, or something that's going on in your life, death or not death related, when it comes to the children, when you're feeling sad, when you're feeling down, being honest about that. Hey, I'm kind of sad today, and moving on and just being honest with those relationships. I remember it was about 5 years after my dad died, and it was also like a year after I quit my job as a center director. So we're like a year or so into family childcare. One of the little girls, Annie, comes up to me and she's like, and I thought I had the mask on, you know, you're kind of feeling down, but you put the happy face mask on. And I thought I was faking it pretty good, but she comes up to me and she's like, "Sad, Jeff?" And I'm like, yeah, how'd you know? And then her head goes to the other side. She's like, "Hug." Aww. And I'm like, yeah. And she throws her arms around me and I get this huge hug, because no matter how much we think we're good at covering up those big feelings that we're having, kids see right through that with laser focus, because their welfare depends on being able to read their adults. And so it also, being honest with those feelings also gives them an opportunity to practice consoling other people and dealing with all those very complicated social interactions that come around big topics like death.
And naming, like just saying it. I mean, there's Mr. Rogers, right? If we can talk about it, if we can name it, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
But if we can't name it, then it keeps us in this perpetual state of like unsettlement, disequilibrium.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is. You know, it might feel funny. It might feel awkward. It might feel yucky, but it is sad. And
it's okay to be sad.
And it's okay. Yeah. And see, this is bringing up for me like the whole inconsistency piece too, which is, you know, how really are we going to assist in the emotional regulation and self-regulation, and how do we facilitate that in twos, threes, and fours when we're not even willing potentially to say, you know, yeah, I am kind of mad today, or I am sad, or I'm really just tired today and I don't know why I'm so tired. You know, it's not that you're completely invisible, right? Not invisible. Transparent, right? Because you have to be appropriate. You're still the adult.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if you want children who are able to emotionally self-regulate, they need to be surrounded by adults who can do the same thing, or at least be willing to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to circle back to experiencing death, this is why whether you're a parent listening to this or a caregiver, if the hamster, do people still have pet hamsters anymore? Is that still a thing? I don't
really
know.
Probably not right now. All the pets went home on March 13th, and I think they're still with that one family.
Yeah, we'll go tarantulas and lizards. That's probably whatever the pet is. If the pet dies, you don't sneak it out in the middle of the night and send it to camp. You let the kids notice. And you talk about it and you mourn and you have that experience, because it helps prepare them for dealing with that on bigger scopes, or bigger scales when they get older. Being able to mourn the goldfish when you're three makes it a little bit easier to mourn grandpa when you're 13 or 35 or whatever it is.
Yeah, and but so, if the goldfish has always been replaced.
Yeah, you know? I mean, sure, it's easy to go out and find a replacement goldfish, but you can't just pop out to the shop and find a replacement grandpa. I mean, that's...
I would also say, and this is maybe some strategy, which might be kind of hard for the... I don't know. Let's see if I can encapsulate it. So to go back to your dead goldfish, that you said, first we have to observe it, right? We have to notice it. So maybe I notice it first. Maybe I wait to see if the kids notice it. Maybe I announce that I noticed right? Maybe I notice that she notices, but I'm going to follow where the kids are going before I get on some kind of a, the goldfish is dead monologue, right? Miss Lisa, the fish is floating.
What's Mr. Bubbles up to?
Yeah. Yeah. But going back to being comfortable sitting in that spot of not being in such a hurry to fill the silence with your own voice, because they're processing. You need to, whatever they share with you first is going to be the first hint and clue to where we might facilitate that conversation or to guide that conversation. You know, being mindful of not jumping to conclusions or making assumptions that just because you now know the goldfish is dead, they might not initially make that leap at all.
Yeah.
So you don't want to overshoot the mark, right? Yay, yeah. I'm willing to talk about death, you know, and then we miss it because the kids didn't even put two and two together that the fish was dead.
Yeah, or if they notice that the fish is dead, they're like, yeah, and they're on to other things because their mind isn't there.
Right. You don't need to turn it into a thing just because you're comfortable talking about it.
Yeah, forcing everybody to circle time to talk about the goldfish, the dead goldfish, when they're interested in the live caterpillar they found on the playground is not really effective either.
Yeah, exactly. Good point.
So have we wrapped this one up?
Did we beat a dead horse?
That's what I was gonna say that, but I was trying not to, but you did. So hey Debbie, I'm sorry for your loss, and I can't imagine, and we talked about it. I don't know if we did a good job, but we did what we could. Hey listeners, this has been the Child Care Barn Girl podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode. If you have thoughts or ideas on this one, reach out and let us know if you've dealt with this and you found effective strategies that we can share with others. We'd like to do that. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.